Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Solace in the City. Today, I am with Enna Solmanovich. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm really excited. I actually just messaged her on Instagram, and turns out to be a really awesome person, which you all see
in this episode.
So, thank you so much for being here. I guess my first question is, like, where are you from? How old are you? What's your story?
So to begin, I'm from Toronto, Canada. I was born in America, so I have dual citizenship, but I grew up basically 18 years of my life in Toronto, just outside of the city. I have two younger brothers, two parents. One brother actually went to college with me in the States, so I went to Cincinnati to swim on a scholarship there, and now I am working in New York City doing some brain injury research. I'm turning 23 next month.
Nice. Happy almost birthday. So you grew up in Canada, and were you always an athlete? Like, did you always play sports?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I started actually as a dancer. I was a ballerina for a really long time. I think it was honestly at least 10 plus years. And I stopped when I started to get a little bit more involved in swimming. So my brother, one of my younger brothers started swimming before I did, and I needed to find some way to cross train. So I started doing competitive swimming, and it was eventually just lose a little bit or not go to some swim practices for ballet. And then it was, okay, miss ballet practice for swimming. Yeah. So I ended up getting really good at it, and I stuck with that for a really long time. So yeah, I mean, through my high school experience, all I did was swim. My head was kind of up my own butt a lot. I just loved swimming and everything I did, like whether it was eating or whether it was like my sleep, my schedule was all revolving around sports. Yeah.
What was, like, before, no pun intended, diving into swimming, mm-hmm. What was your experience with ballet? Like, I was also a ballerina, and you know, there's like the stereotype of it being really intense and mm-hmm. your teachers being mean. Like, what was your experience with that?
No, I had a great experience dancing. My teacher, her name was Miss Bell, and I absolutely loved it. It honestly brought me so much joy just being up on stage, and it was a lot different than swimming. It was, I mean, it's art. It's not very structural. You can do whatever you want and convey whatever message you want. So I was lucky. I had great teachers. I had a great, not teammates, but like dancers with me. And I loved competing all the time in that too. I miss it a lot now. It's like one of the things I still go watch like the National Ballet mm-hmm. or watch videos on like Facebook of like ballerinas and still follow them all on Instagram that I've always really loved and enjoyed growing up. And I do miss it, but I mean, it ended for a good reason. So.
Yeah. And then did you have that equal love with swimming? You said like everything revolved around it.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely like ballet was my life. And then I switched because I realized it was more so of a strategic decision where I can get college paid for, like literally don't pay a single cent, which I didn't have to for college if I swam, or, you know, I don't know how much longer I'll have in ballet, even though I was really good at it. There's always an end point in mm-hmm. dance because it is very intense on the body. Like there's no way of getting around it. You're going to be injured. So I ended up loving swimming as well. It was a love-hate relationship, though, for a long time because you're very tired. And, we trained at 1.9 times per week, and it was at least 5 hours a day. And it was intense. And I would say that I lost a lot of friends in high school just because I didn't have time for people. And that wasn't the most mature thing ever. I needed to get that scholarship and to try to succeed in it, so...
So what was, once you got the scholarship and where'd you go to school?
I went to the University of Cincinnati.
Yeah. Okay. And what was that like being a D1 athlete there?
I mean, that was an experience. I had the most unconventional experience because of an injury. But being an athlete, I mean, if anybody ever has the opportunity to be a collegiate athlete, take it. I know that there's a lot of negative connotation out there about the NCAA right now and what people's perceptions are from the outside, but from the inside out, it's a lot different. And it's also, I was privy to a lot of things after my injury, which I not a lot of other athletes got to experience either. So I loved my experience. Yeah, I had great coaches, great teammates, and a really great environment to be in. I don't think that, I mean, everything happens for a reason, but I don't think my story would have ended up the way that it did if I didn't go to Cincinnati.
And what did you have, like, any or feel any pressures or stress at the time you were swimming? Like, I know it's a very kind of one of those sports where it is a team sport, but at the same time, you have to put so much pressure on yourself. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, there's external pressures and there's also internal pressures. So I joke about it now, but back then, I mean, it's stressful. You go to morning practice, then you have to get up for that. Then you go to class, and then you've got to balance every single aspect of your day up until like 10 p.m. And you're like, man, now I just got to go sleep and do it all over again tomorrow. So there are a lot of external factors, like, okay, you're swimming for your team. You're not swimming just for yourself anymore like you were when you were younger. But also, I mean, any competitive person, you just want to get a little bit better each day. And so in swimming, it was always just get 1 millisecond better.
Yeah, like literally count yourself.
Yeah, every time you swam and you know that you did your job that day. But if you didn't, it's really, you get really hard on yourself. And so I was definitely hard on myself for a very long time. And it took a lot, like basically losing everything in order to understand that it wasn't, I didn't ever have to be that like upset about things. Just go with the flow.
Yeah. So do you mind just kind of sharing with my listeners kind of like what happened to you with your injury and mm-hmm. kind of the story that I read online?
Yeah. So, I mean, the story that everyone reads online isn't always as comprehensive, so
yeah,
I'll try to give a little bit more detail. But yeah, so I was training for Olympic trials my freshman year. We just finished up at conference, and I did not swim very well. I think I was tired. I can't really remember what I was feeling at the moment, but this was like end of freshman year. The season was just done, but I had about a month and a half left of training mm-hmm. until some, like I could consider it summer, because in Canada, our Olympic trials happen in April. So we finished conference. It was like a 4-day meet, got back the week after that. It was a Thursday morning. And like I said, I was just tired, dead tired. And my roommate at the time, we had our beds connected because she was injured as well. So we were really close and we wanted to sleep next to each other, just have our bunk beds beside each other in the room. So my phone fell behind my bunk bed and I didn't. The alarm was going off and I didn't want to wake her up. So I tried to jump off my bed to go and get it really quickly because I was going to morning practice and she obviously didn't have to train that morning. And I guess somehow when I meant to put my hand on the cabinet, mind you, the bed's like lofted, I'd say about 5 feet okay. off the ground. Yeah, so about my height. And I just fell. I was so tired. I just remember like nose diving into the ground, and it wasn't a soft ground. It was like concrete covered by carpet. It's just a dorm room made out of cement, you know? And yeah, I woke up a few minutes later. My roommate's like yelling at me, trying to throw pillows at me to wake me up. And I guess I had knocked out. I really don't remember. Like I remember falling, but after that, I don't really remember much. Mm-hmm. And all I did was hop right back into bed. Like I just got up, woke up stunned and went to sleep. I woke up about 2 hours later. And I mean, my head hurt really bad because I had hit my head on the concrete and like knocked out. But I went to the trainer later that day and I said, look, our trainers are like our athletic trainer, like our doctors, whatever not. And so I went and spoke to him. I said, I hit my head this morning, like falling out of my bed. I didn't go to practice. Like, you know, can you check me out? So we did the whole impact testing, but just there on, we have a concussion baseline we do at Cincinnati. And he checked me out. He's like, you probably hit your head really hard. Like you're concussed, you know, you're showing all the symptoms. So I ended up working with our neurologist who ended up becoming my really close mentor and really good friend later on. And he helped me get back to normal, essentially, like no more pain, because I mean, I had a biology exam the next day. That was the most gruesome experience ever, just trying to study for this test and I'm concussed. But yeah, so a month later, I ended up getting cleared for swimming again, and I jumped into the water that morning, and I just felt like this really random kind of like point pain in the middle of my back. And what I know now is bony tenderness, like because I've worked a little bit of medicine now, I know that, oh, probably a break. I just kept swimming through it. My coach was like, go to weights, you know, go see the trainer afterwards, and then trainer was like, go to weights, come see me afterwards. We just didn't really know what mm-hmm. it was. And we're like, okay, just go and do your thing, come back and we'll figure it out. I did a clean pool in one of them, and I was like, okay, man, this kind of hurts. Then I did it again, and I was like, man, this really hurts. And I did it a third time, and it just popped. And fell to the ground and didn't know what was going on. Like, I couldn't feel my legs because I guess I had done something really bad. I got carried up to the training room, and we did an x-ray. And it turns out that when I fell out of my dorm bed that month before, I also hit my back, and I fractured it, a tiny little fracture. But we didn't think of it because it wasn't hurting me at the time. I wasn't doing anything while I was concussed.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess when I fell or did the clean pull again, it made it worse. And I actually ripped the muscle off the spine where it was broken. So I had an avulsion fracture up in the middle of my back. And throughout therapy and stuff, I ended up developing a spondy, which is when one of the vertebrae shifts forward as well. So that indefinitely put me out because I need essentially the only option is to have surgery or live with the pain. So I had to decide or be told that I couldn't swim again. So, yeah.
So what was that like? You obviously grew up swimming, dedicated your life to it. Like, what was your initial response? Kind of, how'd you process that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it took about 8 months. It wasn't like an immediate decision after that. Like I said, I was about a month out of Olympic trials when I fell out of my bed. And then when I got cleared, it was like a few weeks left. And we were like, yeah, it's fine. You fell, you hit your head, you'll be okay. You'll get back in the water. And I mean, I didn't get back in the water for 8 months. I had tried to swim a little bit over that summer. I did therapy every day. I was doing absolutely everything I could to feel better, but nothing was working. And I think that was the hardest part about it all, was just understand, like trying to cope with, okay, I'm doing everything I can, but this is not going my way. So how am I supposed to fix this?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a really big learning curve, but also it was just like an inevitable pit of like sadness for a really long time. And then nobody really mentioned the words medical disqualification until like November. So, I mean, I fell on my bed in February, got back in or did the whole clean pool incident back in March. And then about 8 months later, I sat in my head trainer's office and he closed the door and he was like, I have to do this 8 times per year. And it's the worst thing that worst part of my job. But he said, we're going to have to medically disqualify you because it's either the next 4 years or the next 40, you know, and he was trying to look out for me. And so if people don't know, medical disqualification is when in the NCAA, you're protected. If you have an athletic related injury, you will get to keep your scholarship essentially and still be a part of the athletics program, but you just cannot train or compete.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a liability at that point. I'm just in a lot of pain. I've tried injections like no other, about 20 different kinds, and it was a lot. It was so much to handle, and it wasn't getting any better. So he looked at me and he said, you know, it's now or never. Like, you don't want to make this worse because the rest of your life could be at stake if you know, it's your back. It's not like it's your hand and you can use the other one. You only have one back and one chance at this.
Mm-hmm.
So in that moment, I mean, I remember begging him to do absolutely anything else. I was like, can we try a few more injections? Can we do this? Can we do that? Because the day before, actually, I went to go see the surgeon and my dad was with me. And he looked at my dad. He said, look, like we're not going to do the surgery. We're just going to try to find some other options here. You know, we'll see what we can do. And, even the surgeon looked at me and he was like, look, I don't know that you should keep swimming. And so my dad was like, are you telling her to give up? Is this it? You know, then the next day it just came out of nowhere, really. So it was hard. It was really, really hard for, say, about a year and a half. It's a whole identity shift. People, you know, like when people leave the military and they come out of that, you still feel like you're a part of it, obviously. And there's so many different factors to that. You know, I use that example because people come back with PTSD, you know, they come back with so many different issues and their life has totally changed. So it's the same thing. You know, you've been doing something for so long, you've prepared your whole life for this. And then, you know, a freak accident happens and I can no longer swim, where I can barely walk at one point because it hurts so bad. So it was a really, really, really dark time. I did a lot of things I shouldn't have done, just, you know, trying to cope. It was the only way I knew. I was in college, so I'd stay out, you know, I'd hang out with people all the time, would slowly stop doing my homework, and definitely fell off a little bit on the school thing. And I was studying biology, so it wasn't easy, but I did the very bare minimum in order to survive. I just wasn't really taking care of myself. And it wasn't until the people around me started to notice and started to pull me out of that. So.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and I kind of want to hear about how that's transpired and everything like that. Okay, so after the you were medically disqualified, you mentioned that you were still considered a D1 athlete and still given the same sort of like resources, I guess, except you couldn't participate. What were the differences? Like, what did you receive versus what couldn't you do?
So yeah, my coaches were really awesome in the experience. They, especially my head coach Mandy, she made sure that I got to stay as involved as possible. And I mean, it was my choice. You don't have to stay involved when you're medically disqualified. You can leave. You can go to a different school if you want to transfer. You can go home. It's up to you. But I mean, I had built my life here now, and I had a really good support system. So she let me stay on kind of in a team manager role, and they removed me from the roster. So there's legislation in place where you can't pay for like injured athletes to travel. So she removed me from the roster, and I served as a volunteer assistant to the team. So I got to travel, and it all made it legal in that sense where I could go to every meet, be basically the teammate that I always wanted to be. In that role there now. So because I had more time to, you know, be there and sitting on the side of the pool, I started to notice everything that I had might've done wrong before. So it was hard, but, it was much better than, you know, having to leave or, being on my own. So I got, to stay involved in that aspect, but also because it was a medical disqualification. I mean, I still had my team doctors. I started seeing a psychiatrist, a psychologist for therapy weekly, just because it was a really hard transition, and the athletic department wanted to make sure that I was okay and taking everything day by day. So that was one of the resources there. And I mean, basically everything stayed the same. The only thing that changed was I was not getting in the water anymore, and I still had a right to if I wanted to, like swim in a lane on the side and go back and forth. But it was way too hard. Like I'd watch my teammates and man, I wish that I could do that. Like, this was everything. And so it's more of a mental thing at that point as to why I didn't get in just to have fun. But I definitely got to serve as a, even though I hated being called coach, I wanted to be a teammate. You know, I didn't want that role at all. But I served in that role in a sense, just a sense with a different title.
Gotcha. And did you feel like your mental health was affected at all by the injury?
Yeah, that was the biggest part. I mean, physically still I have pain to this day, and it's been 5 years now. Everything I've done since then has been because of my mental health, and that's how I kind of got involved with the NCAA in promoting mental health awareness, especially in injured athletes and male-dominated fields where, you know, if they get injured, they're not going to be the ones to reach out and go seek help, and a lot of the times they don't ever receive that help after that happens. So, yeah, it was very affected, and I think I'm a much better person now because of it, because I got to see and learn and understand what other people go through when they suffer these big losses. On the outside looking in, people could be like, it's just your sport, like, you're still alive, you're still, you know, but it's all relative. Like, it was my life, so it really changed me drastically. I think I'm a better person for it, though, so.
And if I'm not wrong, you helped conceive the Powerful Minds Initiative. Was this afterwards?
Yeah, so this happened, say, a year after my injury. I was elected as a rep to National SAC, which is the Student Athlete Advisory Committee. So how it works is that every school, NCAA school, has to have a SAC. Then each conference has one. So there's 32 conferences in Division I, and then there's a national one. So I got the role to serve as the national SAC rep for my conference. And so I traveled to Indy all the time. I basically traveled all over and represented student athletes within my conference. And one of the big things that I pushed was mental health, because now I had a huge platform in order to do this. But yeah, within the conference, my friends and I, and one of my best friends, Morgan, we started a initiative within the conference called Powerful Minds. We were sitting in a room when this was conceived. This was my sophomore year, and we were end of sophomore year summer. We were sitting in a big room in Rhode Island at the conference office, and we're looking at each other. There's like 12 of us from each school in the conference. And we'd never met each other before this event, but we left best friends. All of us to this day are still best friends. Yeah. And there was not a single dry eye in the room as we were discussing what we wanted to focus on that year. And we all just unanimously decided mental health. Like, there's an issue, we need to address it, and how are we going to do it? So we came up with the Powerful Minds Initiative, which is an initiative spearheaded by our conference to promote mental health awareness, but also promote mental health resources that are available on our campuses. Because what we're finding is that athletics, it's on a college campus, is so secluded. Everything is done within athletics and housed within athletics. If you're an athlete, everything happens, you know, as an athlete. You're not really considered a normal student. And that's such a, that's hard. That's a really big barrier for student athletes because there's so many resources out there. How do we make sure that they get to them? Same way, vice versa. We wanted to promote mental health awareness for normal students, you know, and make sure that they're getting the care that they need as well, because they probably have their own barriers and jobs and things that don't allow them to get that care. So yeah, we started this initiative. It's now going, it'll be into its fourth year next year. It's in its third year now. And it basically, the whole logo is a green ribbon for mental health awareness. And we ended up getting a lot of really important celebrities or athletic celebrities involved to promote the initiative. And it really, it did some great things. Like, I look back on it during our first year, about, I was told 50% of our football team went and saw one of our sports psychologists. And we now have three at Cincinnati. When I started, we only had one, and he was there maybe a few hours a week, but now we have three. And it was awesome to see how many people cared within the conference, just because, like, I was able to say, look, this affected me. Did it affect you too? Yes. Okay. Let's do something. And it resonates with everyone. You can't ever say that mental health does never affect you.
Yeah.
You
know? It's universal. It affects everyone.
In one way, shape, or form, every single person you will ever meet has been affected by mental health. It might not be them, but it could be, you know, someone they know that also impacts them. So it was awesome to just see this come to fruition and see what it is now. So
that's so interesting. So you said that like 50% of the football team went to see a therapist. So they weren't, I guess, like, you weren't obligated to see a therapist while you were in. Oh, that's so interesting. I feel like that's, I mean, I'm like a very big advocate for therapy.
Yeah, of course.
It's literally just an opportunity to talk to someone, especially if it's free. Like,
mm-hmm.
I look back at college and I'm like so grateful that therapy was free for four of, like, you know, the most transformative years.
Yeah.
I guess what other, how did you, I guess, promote, like, the therapist? How did you get the awareness out mm-hmm. for, like, the football players to go see, go talk to someone?
Yeah, the whole purpose of the initiative was just to make sure that people understood that, like, look, everyone goes through this. How can we help you? How can we make sure that you are taken care of? So we did a lot of outreach within our schools, but, I mean, this was a conference-wide. Like, every school within the conference, there was 12 schools. Did their own things on their campus that were particular to them. So, for example, at Cincinnati, we had events that we would coordinate, and we would table random things, just outreach to remind our student athletes, like, look, you are not alone in this. You have the resources here. How do we make sure that you get access to them? And a big thing that I realized throughout all of it, I mean, as a small white female, and I came from Canada, where things are a lot different growing up than they are in America. You know, like, I laugh about how different things were and how my experience was different than other people's here. And I can never say I was a guy, and, you know, I can never say I was a different race, but that's what I love about sports so much, is that it gets people off the street, literally. Sports, you know, is going to one day cure all evil. So we have a melting pot of people. It's such a diverse group. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone felt like they needed it, or everyone felt like they could access it, but we had the resources, and especially for the football team or for the basketball team. And I think back to my, like, really good friends. I have one really awesome friend who ended up transferring. He's a football player, and seeing how he, you know, dealt with his own things his way. And then I have a really good friend on the basketball team, and, like, how he dealt with his things his way too. Everybody was different. And so we really tried to hone in on the male population as well, because they're the least likely to go and seek out mental health resources. But it's also, and not just males in general, it's like football, basketball, ice hockey, Also women's basketball, they're not the most likely to go and reach out for help. So we tried to hone in on that, and we incorporated the Powerful Minds campaign into the conference championship. We had like a week of games where we had green games. So everyone on the team would wear like either a green ribbon or had green socks, green hair bands. And then we would talk about it during the game. Some schools did essentially like a podcast kind of interview during the like halftime of the football game to kind of spark people's interest. And I mean, it brought in a lot of really cool people. Like I said, a lot of cool celebrities out there talking about it and tweeting out about it. Like we made it kind of like a social media kickoff. So everyone uses that, you know, and if you're promoting it that way, it's really awesome. So yeah, we just did as much outreach as we possibly could to make sure that everyone knew it existed. And then from there, our schools kind of took over and made sure that, you know, donors were started to donate money towards, you know, different initiatives. And the conference eventually this year, I believe they donated a certain amount of money to each school to promote mental health and this initiative in general. So people, it took time and it took a lot of buy-in because athletics, like I said, is very like exclusive, very, you know, to themselves. And even as an athlete, and I was an athlete that got along with everyone, it was still really hard for me to convince people that this was important. So, I mean, now 3 years later, I still get emails from people and texts from people saying like, man, I read your story, or they're like, can you help me figure this out? Who can I reach out to? And I've never had, no one ever says no to me. So,
yeah, I was going to say, after you shared your own story, did you notice people kind of confiding in you and reaching out to you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was just the closest people around me, because I mean, I'm a very independent and secluded person in general. I don't like to talk about myself. Like, this is already a step too far for me. I'm like, oh man, I'm talking too much. But yeah, so it was the people closest to me just reaching out. That was the first thing I noticed, being like, look, I didn't know that you felt this way. Or you never acted like this. Mm-hmm. Like, especially because the magazine that came out about me for the NCAA, the Champion magazine. People back home, I mean, I don't really talk to many people from high school, but I had so many people reach out to me after reading that story, and they're like, I had no idea. And they're like, I've been going through the same thing too. I have athletes from all over, honestly, all over America, still to this day reach out to me and they're like, I read your story and I'm going through a similar thing. Like, can you help me out? And but I think the really awesome one was, I think it was like a 75-year-old man reached out to me on Facebook, through Facebook Messenger. And he was like, I used to go to Cincinnati and I was depressed, and I'm just so thankful that now, you know, like 50 years later, that they're doing something about it. He said, I wish I had that. Or there was a past teammate who I never swam with. Like, he went to school maybe 5 years before I did, and he reached out to me on LinkedIn, and he was like, I read your story and I feel like we are just that much closer. Like, I've only ever met him once in person, but we talk now all the time. So it's really awesome to see like how it impacted people, and how just one person, like, I'm no one, you know, compared to all these people in the world, but I meant something to people. So at least my story did. So it resonated, and it was awesome. Yeah.
That's so great. And it's so true though. I mean, there's such a stigma around talking about mental health. And I feel like the minute you just somewhat break that barrier and somewhat share like a little bit about yourself, people all of a sudden feel like this huge like wall come down, and that they can give that back.
And that's like the biggest thing that I think about. I'm like, if my story meant this much to someone, imagine what, you know, when DeMar DeRozan or Kevin Love, these really high-end basketball players that everyone looks up to, when they talk about their struggles, I mean, that's touching the masses. You know, like, it's just awesome. We need more of that. We need people to talk about their struggles, because the worst thing you can ever feel like, especially when you're going through an injury like I did, is to see you feel alone, that no one else understands. So,
yeah, I'm just thinking about, and I forget his name, the football player for the San Francisco 49ers, Solomon Thomas, that's the thing. Like, he just did, it's called when you have your cleats, like, for a charity. I forget what the...
Like, donated his cleats, or...?
No, like, something with, like, their cleats are for a specific charity, but he chose the AFSP, which it just shows, like, the huge impacts that are, like, small... thing can do, like wearing cleats that
have it. The smallest thing makes a difference.
Yeah, definitely. So now that you've graduated, how do you continue to spread awareness around this cause? And
yeah, so I mean, I will always be an athlete. That's like a word. It took me a long time to also realize that like it's okay to define myself as that, because I was that for so long. And even though it got taken away against my own will, still can't identify as an athlete. So, I mean, I try to stay as involved as possible. So I work still with some people at the NCAA. I still try to stay as involved as possible, even though I'm not on my college campus, to promote the initiative. And I mean, things as simple as on Instagram, you know, just making sure if I like post something related to it, like people still talk about it and ask me about it, and doing things like this. I think it's really important for people to still, you know, just hear your voice. So I try to stay as involved that way. But I do also work with the Jed Foundation a little bit. They are housed here in New York City, and they're an advocacy group as well for not only suicide prevention, but just mental health and wellness in general. And so I've definitely worked with them on a few events, like their storytelling event recently, which was a really awesome and eye-opening experience to, again, share my story, but in a different light, and working with those advocacy groups. And I mean, the work that I do now, I study brain injury research. My goal is to one day, hopefully by the end of this year, apply to medical school. And I would love to become a psychiatrist. That's my end goal. Now the NBA has the openings for psychiatrists as well as mental health practitioners for each team. And I think my dream job would be a psychiatrist for an NBA team. So I'm hoping that that one day happens.
That'd be so cool. Do you know what team you'd want to do?
I mean, I'm a Raptors fan, so if I can stick with the Raptors, that'd be really cool. But I mean, I love New York City and I would love to stay here. I'm realizing that you can be anything you ever wanted to in New York. So I'm really hoping that I could stay here as well.
Definitely. Oh my gosh, that dog is so loud. That's so cool. So where are you at? You're doing the medical research at Mount Sinai?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's I work on the Upper East Side, the main hospital, at the Brain Injury Research Center. And so I work on a few studies. If you want to donate your brain, hit me up. we collect brains for people, and one of the studies I work with. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take another quick break and then end by asking you a couple of questions that I love to ask and end with.
Good.
Okay, so a couple of these questions might, I don't know, be kind of obvious for the answer.
It's okay.
But I don't know if anything happens to pop in your mind that's like different or whatever. So the first question is, what's one thing in your life that's happened to you that's made you a stronger person today?
I mean, I could definitely say my injury. I look back on it now and it was the biggest blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
I think I needed it. And I would never have ever wished this experience upon anyone else, because I think I harbored so much pain for so long and I could never watch anyone ever suffer like I did. But it made me, you know, a 10 times better person. It made me empathize with so many people. Even in the line of work that I do now, I can sit with my participants and be like, I hit my head too, and I know exactly how you're feeling. And that is something so important to me, is to be able to empathize and look at someone dead in the eye and say, I understand you. Mm-hmm. Because it's so terrible not being understood. So I think it's definitely, my injury was one of the biggest things that helped me be a better person.
And kind of on a similar note, sorry.
Mm.
Hopefully it's not too buzzy. Do you believe everything happens for a reason? I think you might have mentioned it before.
Yup. Man, if I could get that tattooed on my forehead. Yeah, everything happens for a reason. We might not know the reason. We might not ever know the reason, but it doesn't matter. There was still a reason and there was a purpose to it. I look back on simple things that had happened throughout the injury, throughout my experience in college. And I would not be here in this moment sitting doing this podcast right now if literally everything happened any different, you know, even the slightest little thing. And whatever's up, I'm not a religious person, but whatever's up there is looking out for every single one of us. And he would not put something, or she would not put something in front of us if they knew that we couldn't handle it. So,
yeah. I completely agree. Okay. If a crystal ball could tell you anything about yourself, your life, your future, or anything else, what would you most want to know?
I would just want to know what comes next. I've developed a really big fear of death and the unknown throughout this injury, because just throughout my lifetime, every single thing, like I said, happens for a reason. But half the time you don't know. And I struggle with not knowing a lot. Like My grandma passed back in August of, it was 2018. And I think after her death, a lot that I, you know, that was a big change in my life. And it still sticks with me today, and I still don't understand why she had to go. And so like, I look back on that and I think, I'm like, man, if I could, I don't want to know when I do die, but I want to know that, like, am I going to accomplish everything I've ever wanted to? Because so much of my life was planned and it didn't go according to plan. Mm-hmm. So it really, I just want to know if like everything I'm doing now is worth it, you know, because, I just want to make sure that I'm living an impactful life, whatever, for someone out there. So,
yeah. I mean, I definitely think you are. Like,
thanks.
Just given like where everything's like led you, that you could give back your own story in addition to just like, I mean, you're 22, mm-hmm. like 23, like you have, I mean, granted, I'm not much older, like giving my wise words of advice, but yeah, from a third party perspective, you definitely are making an impactful or have living an impactful life. My next question is, do you have a quote or a mantra that you live by?
Yes. Things are as they are. We suffer because we imagine different. There's things in our control and there's some things that are out of our control. The way you react to any situation is going to impact how, like what the reaction becomes or what the ending result is. So I honestly try to live by that every day where, you know, if something happens and something is put in front of me, how am I going to change the outcome rather than how am I going to let it just impact, you know, the rest of my life? So that's something that I definitely stick by every day.
I love that. Okay. Second to last question is, what do you love most about yourself?
That's funny because I recently, my mom's probably going to be listening to this, but I recently got into a fight with my mom, and I love her to death, but she looked at me and she said, "You're too nice. You're too nice to people." And, she wasn't necessarily mad that I was too nice. There was more of a story to it, obviously. But she wants me to become like a stand up for myself a little bit more in situations. But I think that's the best part about me. And I want to help everyone. Like I see it's just simple things. Like I'll go to an ATM just to pull out, you know, money if I don't have cash for a homeless person and come back and give it to them because I want to know that everyone's okay. I want to know that everyone goes to bed happy, but I mean, I can't be that person for everyone, but I think just, yeah, being too nice sometimes. I love that about myself. I'll keep being like this for the rest of my life.
When's your birthday?
Wait. January 30th.
So you're like a Pisces?
Aquarius.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense. I had someone on the podcast who explained to me that, so because she was an Aquarius and she said that like, it means you like to know everything, but share it with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be like, be like, "Oh, I like your shoes." And you'll be like, "Thanks. I got them at like 50% off at Marshall's or something like that."
I have to let everyone know. Yeah. I mean, I look and think about it. I'm like, if I ever won the lottery, I wouldn't keep it. I'd give it away. I don't need it. I love a good life anyway. So
that's awesome. Okay. My last question, which is the name of the podcast, is how do you find solace in the city?
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I'm brand new, brand spanking new to the city. I've been here for just a few months now, loving my job or working at my job. People, I think people bring me so much joy. And I literally got into an Uber out of the airport when I first got here. And I asked the Uber driver, "What's your favorite part about the city?" And he was like, "You could be anything you've ever wanted to be, no matter who you are. Everyone comes to New York City to find their joy and find their solace, you know, and I think that just the people here, you know, I always talk to strangers on the subway, always, and if they ever approach me, I'm never standoffish about it. I just love meeting people, and I think that that's definitely how I've found my love for New York City.
That's awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much for letting me record with you.
Well,
you're such an interesting person. I feel like I've learned so much. Where can all my listeners, like, follow you or you know, read your story, give back to the organizations you're a part of?
Oh man, that would mean a lot. I mean, you can follow me on Instagram. It's just ENNNERZ. Well, the Z as you guys in America say. A lot of stuff that I do is up on there. But I mean, I highly suggest just, you know, reaching out and following the JED Foundation, the NCAA in general, AFSP or the American Foundation on Suicide Prevention. any, you know, all these organizations are doing some really amazing things for mental health. And I think it's really important for everyone to just get some tips, you know, do some events with them, and, you know, follow along, especially if you're an athlete, you know, following the NCAA and seeing what the Sports Science Institute does or the new legislation that's out there for mental health, that I was lucky enough to help push through. I think it's really important. Knowledge is key. So just keep searching for it.
It's awesome. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.